Welcome to this afternoon's session on sustainability and production practices. Our next topic will be promoting crop and soil management practices that protect water quality through a unique public-private partnership in Minnesota. And our speaker is Todd Peterson with Winfield Solutions. Todd, it's up.
Audience in the room, thanks for sticking with us to the last day. Reading my title, you can see I was going for the longest title. But thanks for bearing with us here. Here's my agenda for this afternoon. I'm going to talk a little bit about Land O'Lakes. Actually, I'm no longer with Winfield Solutions. Land O'Lakes formed a new business unit called Sustain, in which we're going to hope to get paid for sustainability services. So I'll talk a little bit about what makes Land O'Lakes unique in this space and our opportunity in providing sustainability and stewardship services, a business opportunity, frankly. I'll talk a little bit about Minnesota, some of the programs that they have proposed and initiated, and the agreement that we have with the state of Minnesota to help implement the state's programs and defining what it is we're working on doing. Some of this is very much still in progress, so I'll give you more or less a progress report of where we're at and what we intend to build. I'm going to talk a little bit about how do we accelerate the adoption and implementation of conservation practices across the landscape. Our real targets are Iowa and Minnesota for some obvious reasons. They are in the national spotlight as far as putting conservation practices in place that will have an impact on the water quality. As Nick visited earlier about the targets that we are hoping to hit. A little bit about how we're trying to scale up the solutions and engage growers in what our intentions are. Finally, I'm going to finish with it looks like I got the same outline that Nick used in the earlier talk, and that is how important it's going to be to tell our story and engage the public outside of agriculture. So I'll finish up with a little bit about it's become incumbent on those of us trying to push the adoption of conservation. We have to get out and tell our story better to the general public. So Land O'Lakes, we are a cooperative. There's four main business units. Our Winfield business deals with crop inputs, crop genetics, crop protection products, Purina, animal feed, and nutrition. Everybody knows us for our dairy food products. That's the third business unit. And then the most recent one we created a few months ago is called Land O'Lakes Sustain. And that's where we're going to try to offer sustainability and stewardship services. So what's different about Land O'Lakes is two things. We really do span a large part of the food value chain. We go from the crop inputs, the crop production, down to the field level. We engage with farmers and animal producers, milk, meat producers, and we get involved in the processing of their goods, and actually we buy a lot of milk from our dairy farmer members. We also are involved in some of the other parts of the value chain, all the way down to consumer-branded goods, the dairy products that everybody knows us for, Cozy Shack and some other brands that we own. The point about this is that since we span such a broad part of the food value chain, we tend to hear more about consumer wants and desires about information about their food, more so than many other companies involved in ag. Second thing to point out here is that we are owned by our customers and our dairy producers. So we have about 3,500 member owners. They own Land O'Lakes Cooperative, along with ag retailers, and the farmers typically own those co-ops. So we truly are farmer-owned between our dairy member owners and our ag owners. We touch nearly half of the acres in the U.S. So we're between the Winfield and recently merged with United Suppliers, now called Winfield United, we really do have a large footprint on this food value chain. And again, because we're farmer-owned, we have both a responsibility and a different level of permission than other companies that simply are shareholder-owned and sell inputs to growers. We have an obligation to help them be more sustainable in their operations because we want them around. They're our owners. So what's happened in the last couple of years across Land O'Lakes is sustainability has been a growing concern. We feel those signals from the downstream consumers. And across the company, we've been elevating sustainability as becoming a major priority for us. We've done a large study. These are new words to me quite recently, but materiality study. And what we've learned is that we've got four main categories that we ought to be concerned about the sustainability of our business. One is greenhouse gas, and what can we do to change the evolution, reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. Soil health, as we just heard about in the last presentation, that's a major priority for us. The soil, and I'll come back to this, is the source of what we do. Water quality, probably goes without saying, again, in our states of Iowa and Minnesota, we're under the national spotlight for what can we do to reduce the nutrient loading from ag systems. And finally, in some of the drier regions that we produce, water quantity. So these are our four main priorities in terms of improving sustainability. So the company took a great introspective, taking the results from that study, and said, well, what can we do inside our own four walls? What can we do to improve energy efficiency and reduce greenhouse gas emissions? And it became pretty clear that what we do inside our four walls really pales in comparison to what we can do if we influence the producers, the dairy producers, as well as the crop producers that we interact with. So it was very clear that our focus to improve sustainability needs to go outside our four walls and start working directly with growers and our customer owners. So what's different about Minnesota? A little bit about Minnesota here. If you look at this land use chart, I guess there we do have a mouse. Look at all the areas that's primarily crop production on the west side in the Red River Valley, and then all of the southwestern part of the state is primarily in row crop production. I'm going to highlight one area here, the Minnesota River Valley. This is the Minnesota River here. It flows to about Mankato and then goes back up into the Twin Cities where it joins the Mississippi. So the Minnesota and the Mississippi primarily drain areas that are affected by crop production. Next slide. Here's the Minnesota River Valley. Again, it drains primarily an area that's in row crop production, corn and soybean production. And it flows down to Mankato and then back north where it joins the Mississippi River, and then it flows into the St. Croix River. And I'm pointing this out, again, keep in mind that this area of the state is primarily crop production. Here's where the Minnesota and the Mississippi River intersect with the St. Croix River. St. Croix is draining areas that are largely forested and not in row crop production. And you can see after a good rain, the difference is the color of the rivers coming together here is quite striking. So the opportunities are, we have a great opportunity with practices and structures to greatly reduce this nutrient loading. We can reduce nutrient loads up to 50% simply by changing practices on the farm. And practices that include structures can reduce sediment loading up to 75% without major disruption to the crop production process. Minnesota established a couple of programs, and I'm going to go in a little more detail about. One is the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. The concept here is farmers can apply to be certified. When they are certified and they achieve a certain score on all of their fields in their operation, that means that they have good practices in place and good soil conservation structures and systems in place. Once they achieve certification, they are free from new laws and regulation for the next 10 years. It's called regulatory certainty. And this has been very popular among farmers in Minnesota. They like the fact that if they're good enough now, they don't have to follow the new rules that might be coming. They've engaged ag retailers and co-ops to help implement this program. Currently, these numbers aren't quite up to date. There's been, I think, about 225 farms certified, but there still is a backlog that's growing. It's more than 450 farms. And the state of Minnesota, Minnesota Department of Ag, has found that it's required over 20 hours of their time just to certify one farm. So they're looking for some ways to help reduce this backlog. And they actually came to us, since we touch a lot of farmers in the state. We have access to roughly about 25,000 farmers in the state. So the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program is one. The other one is the Minnesota Buffer Strip Law. Now, this was passed by the legislature, the House and Senate in Minnesota, and signed by the governor back in 2015. It simply required a 50-foot grass buffer strip, a perennial grass buffer strip, adjacent to any public waterway that moves flowing water. The DNR required some constructed maps on where these needed to be, and the law actually was amended in 2016 saying you can either put buffer strips in or adjust practices and structures in some combination that would reduce the nutrient flowing into that river the same amount that a 50-foot buffer strip would. Well, this is interesting because the law was passed and signed, and then they started worrying about how are they going to implement this. And again, the state of Minnesota came to us, and I'm going to attempt to play a video here when I get the signal of the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding. To the left is Chris Polizinski, our CEO for Land O'Lakes, and Governor Dayton is seated there. And ready? Okay. I'll just play a little bit of it.
And my first comment is to really compliment the governor on his leadership, both what and how you're doing this. First of all, the water, bringing in soil water conservation to the top of everybody's mind, is a big deal. It's an important issue that we have to work on and improve where we are. Secondly, Governor, I especially appreciate the notion that you approached this with the idea of a public-private partnership being the key to the solution. This issue is so important and so complex, no one of us is going to solve it. All of us will solve it together. And we at Land O'Lakes are thrilled to be part of that partnership as we go forward. So thank you, Governor, for your very strong leadership. The only other comment I really want to make is a little bit about Land O'Lakes and what we...
Cut it off there. Unless you want to see the whole press conference and watch them sign the paper, but the important point there is our CEO is committed to soil and water conservation, and both he and the governor are committed to making this work where we help them implement their program. Now, once the ink was drying, it fell to a bunch of us to figure out how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? So I'll talk a little bit about the what here. We've got two programs to implement, and we've agreed in principle that we're going to help the state of Minnesota implement these programs and drive the acceleration of conservation practices on the ground. So we did a little bit of thinking about and some data-driven learning about the growers that we're dealing with in southern Minnesota. We said, can we get a typical profile and understand, you know, these programs have been out there, these techniques, they're not new. What's holding us back? A little bit about the grower. Growers are influenced by primarily family members, and at first, the second one, the threat of looming regulation, I thought, I guess I didn't appreciate this, but growers really believe that regulation is coming. I don't know if it's just a Minnesota thing or a Minnesota and Iowa thing, but they truly believe that they will be impacted dramatically by new regulations that are coming to their operation. So the third thing is here that they truly trust their local sales agronomists. The local agronomists that they buy inputs from, or that their local crop consultant or seed dealer, they turn to those folks for new information on, you know, help me make this work, or why I suppose I need to try this, and they truly trust their local sales agronomist. The last point here is that growers have no idea how much soil and nutrients they're losing currently. And if I could just emphasize that a bit more, it's not facetious when I say farmers think they're doing okay because they know somebody that's worse than they are. But it's really true. They are leery of learning the truth, but they think that they're all above average in terms of being a conservation farmer. What we think is needed is to provide them real information, and then typically they'll want to make a change. But they don't know where to go for that information. A little bit more. We just profiled, this is a real person, took off the last name, but he's been farming his whole life. A little bit about what Jim talks about. He's insulted by this concept of sustainability. You know, he says, I'm still here. I'm in a third generation farm, and you bet I'm sustainable. And so it's an insult to question that I'm not. I don't know if this was just a bunch of Tea Party activists that we were introduced to, but for the most part, farmers are distrustful of government. And the further that government is away from their farm, the more evil they must be. So the federal agents are less trusted than local and state agents. They say, you know, I have to be profitable first. I'll be sustainable, but I've got to make a living first. And all farmers do have a sense of pride and legacy. They do want to leave that farm in better shape, and they want to know how to do a better job. They just don't know where to go for information. So that understanding the grower, and of course, there's a wide range across all these characteristics, but when we look at that grower and identifying their needs, it gave us some new direction in which we could provide the information that they don't have access to. So we've invested in some technology. We branded it Soil Vantage Conservation Planning Tools, but there's a series of tools. One of them is simply a soil calculator. And the concept is it uses the USDA NRCS's algorithms and data tables and calculates the Russell 2 equation on a 3-meter grid across the field. So every 3-meter by 3-meter, you can estimate soil loss based on climate, rainfall patterns, and soil type and slope. And you can provide a map then of soil loss with an overall estimate of how much soil are you losing on that whole field. I'll come back to a soil calculator, but we also have a waterway builder, essentially constructs a waterway that meets criteria for NRCS. A pond builder, simple way of, if you're interested in building an impoundment, either a pond or a saturated basin, we can construct that, look at the size of the waterway and how much expected runoff. A saturated wetland constructor. And the tool that we're building for the Minnesota buffer law is called Buffer Builder. And we'll be looking at testing that in early 2017. So back to the soil calculator. We can estimate, I think this was a 160 acre field or close to it. Conventional corn-soybean rotation, till in the fall after corn harvest and till in the spring before bean planting, or before corn planting on bean ground. Based on the practices and the location and the soil type, this grower was losing about 1,045 tons per acre per year. That's about 6.5 tons per acre per year. That's over what NRCS would call tolerable, but you can look at the soil loss by the field area and you see there's some huge hot spots, highly sloped land that is light textured soil and are very fine textured soil, and it's losing a lot. We can compare with this tool some alternatives. The alternative on the right is simply going to no-till for both corn and soybean. And you can see there's a dramatic difference and decrease in the amount of water and soil lost. Trying to get cute and demonstrate this to growers, but the conventional practice on the left lost about 6.5 tons per acre per year on average, and the one on the left about 1.2 tons per acre per year. So you can see, again, the soil loss by percent of the field area here is dramatically improved simply by reducing tillage. When we combine these kinds of tools with our normal ways that we interact with the grower, the R7 tool has a profitability map that if growers are willing to share their costs of production, we can combine the profitability map with the soil erosion potential map and have a very interesting discussion with the grower about, you know, if these areas are consistently not profitable, maybe we should think about taking them out of production. Should we look at some other kind of options and consider what else you might want to try to do? And there might even be some government programs to help you assist with that. Finally, we encourage everybody to become familiar with the field-to-market field print calculator that the previous speaker mentioned. We're engaged in trying to utilize the field print calculator as kind of the universal measuring stick across the across the whole industry in terms of measuring the impacts of conservation practices on the ground. If you haven't gone to fieldtomarket.org and played with this, I encourage everybody to do it, because this is the tool that we would like to see used as the measuring stick, the benchmarking tool, to gauge progress and continuous improvement across time here. Okay, I'm going to spend a little time on the challenges here. As I said, Land O'Lakes has formed a new business unit to try to figure out how to get paid for sustainability services, and there are some challenges ahead, and sometimes, like this fish on the right, wonder if we're making the right move at the right time. We're certainly taking a leap, maybe ahead of where some of us are comfortable going, but the first thing I have to mention is working with government agencies. My home state of Minnesota has a lot of government agencies, and many of them were involved in this discussion of agriculture and water quality. While the Minnesota Department of Ag has been the lead authority in implementing those two programs that I mentioned earlier, the buffer strip law and the certification program, at every step of the way, there is the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Board of Soil and Water Resources, as well as the local soil and water conservation districts. And we're never sure who has veto power over what we're doing until we cross that line, but we have to work with a number of federal and state agencies to help make sure that we're all aligned, that they know what we're doing, that we know what they're doing, and that we're not finding ourselves at cross purposes here. It's frankly taken more time than we expected, since it seems like we're all going for the same goals. Training education. Winfield United has a long history of really providing excellent training to our field sales staff and agronomy staff. One of the veteran agronomists told me, at Winfield we hire good people and train them until they quit. But it's been a strength that we've used to differentiate ourselves from competitors. However, when we really look at what training we're doing, it's primarily been product focused. And when you have a conservation discussion with growers, there often may not be a product sale at the end of that conversation. So we don't train on things like sustainability principles or the processes of erosion and what you can do about it, or how to integrate cover crops into your operation, or when is it time to think about a saturated buffer or variable width buffer strip along your field. When we took back the veil and looked at what do we have to get accomplished to make sure that our sales force is up to speed and comfortable talking about these things, it's a significant, it's going to take a lot of work. I have to mention there's some internal resistance. One of our sales directors told me that that sustainability thing, is that a sales prevention program you guys are pushing? Because he assumed if we're talking about sustainability, it must mean less sales. And these are folks that are incented in their annual bonus to sell more, and they have a suspicion that being sustainable must mean selling less, right? Well, not necessarily. Let's just talk about this. But I have to mention some internal resistance. We need to have a conservation credit market. It's been stated in a number of forms, but we know that there are food companies, we know that there are consumers that are willing to help pay for some of these practices that we all know need to be adopted on the land. Yet, we don't have a clear, simple way to provide incentive to farmers for a conservation credit, as well as provide a way to validate those credits. So there has to be either legislation in the next farm bill or some way that we establish a conservation credit market that's measurable and attainable so that we can begin exchanging credits. Finally, getting paid for this. People facetiously say, well, isn't it great you're doing the right thing? Well, no, we have an assignment to go figure out how to get paid for it, really. So not sure how that's going to work, but we are looking and exploring a number of options that here's the challenge in front of us. I mean, diverting time and effort on promoting sustainability is seen as taking time away from product sales and time with customers. So we need to figure out how to make it at least cost competitive. So I'll mention a little bit about public-private partnerships, because I really think that we have to admit this is where the future is in driving conservation practices and sustainability stewardship programs onto the ground. I've mentioned the Minnesota program. Next speaker will be hearing about the Iowa's large RCPP, the jointly managed between the Iowa Ag Water Alliance and the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship. That's a very large RCPP, and I hope that we gain the same kind of traction in Iowa as we begin implementing that, and we'll be hearing about that in just a few minutes. We're also part of another RCPP, Regional Conservation Partnership Program, in Indiana. And this is a partnership with the Nature Conservancy, with Ceres Solutions, one of our large ag retailer co-ops there, along with the local NRCS and the local Soil and Water Conservation Districts, Conservation Tillage Information Center. Boy, I hope I haven't forgotten any of the partners. That's much more confined in a specific watershed, but we're off and running with that program and hope to make major impacts in water quality there. I mentioned the Western Basin of Lake Erie. This is probably the potential hotspot that off to the right you can see what it looked like in August of 2014. I'm sure you've all heard and seen this picture of the drinking water from the Toledo water intake and the situation that occurred with the algal bloom in 2014. But when the water supply for nearly 500,000 people gets turned off for a while, it gets noticed. And conditions were right to have another bloom like this in 2015, and luckily we avoided it with some lucky weather. This is the Achilles heel that could create a problem very quickly. And so we need to get going on this part of the world on improving conservation. I'm afraid that the wrong set of conditions there I'll say this is not Land O'Lakes' view, but it's my own. I think the wrong set of conditions could say that, well, you folks in ag have had enough time to try to clear this up and you haven't figured it out, so we're going to have to come in and help you. So here I can sort of feel for those farmers who say there's looming regulation. This is a part of the world that could erupt in a short time. So I'm through three quarters of my outline here, but I want to spend the last little bit, kind of like Nick did in the last talk. we have to get a whole lot better at telling our story. So we have not been very good about this. You've probably heard this from a lot of other speakers, but I'm going to emphasize this from the Land O'Lakes point of view. Again, the state of Minnesota and the land use patterns in Minnesota, and remember how much of the corn and soybean production is in this southwestern third of the state. I put this map back up here because, like many states, the state of Minnesota contains a large urban area that's increasingly less connected to food production. About half of the voting taxpayers live in the Twin Cities area. So, much like Iowa, we have an increasingly urban and concentrated population that's less and less connected to agriculture. And that's an obvious thing, but it's become really evident that we have not done a very good job of reaching out and telling urban voting taxpayers what good things are happening. And I think it's incumbent on those of us working in this field that we need to do a better job of talking about the good things happening in modern agriculture. Some simple diagrams. We have to figure out how to tell kids that soil is where your food comes from. It's not the grocery store. I don't know how we do this, and I'm open to ideas, but if they don't have a garden, kids don't know where their food comes from. And we have to understand and help make more consumers aware of the connection with the soil. You know, in the upper Mississippi basin, in the Corn Belt, we've lost roughly half of our topsoil. And frankly, that's the easy half. That's the half that may have only cost us a little bit of production. So in Iowa, we've gone from an average of 16 inches to 8 inches deep topsoil. It's been hardly noticed. I mean, you still have soil, and we have soil erosion happening, and indications are it could be getting worse because of our changing rainfall patterns. At my house, August is supposed to be the driest month, and we had 10 inches of rain, and many of it occurred in just a few short bursts. The month of September is supposed to be even also one of the driest months, and we had one night of 13 plus inches in 4.5 hours in north central Iowa. The state of Minnesota has had 3 500-year storms in each of the last 4 years, or 3 of the last 4 years. They've had a 500-year storm somewhere in the state. Something's happening with our rainfall intensity patterns and timing, and it accelerates the loss of soil even more so than what our long-term models are based on 30-year historic average weather. But something's happening. Things are changing. So I don't think we ever do a very good job of building the urgency of this topsoil loss, and we need to do a better job. Soil that moves is not sustainable. And that should be really obvious to this group, but I don't think it's ever become urgent to this group. Now, what you're looking at here is a picture of the Raccoon River. It drains a large part of northwestern, north central Iowa. This is where the Des Moines water system draws its drinking water. So imagine what this looks like after a rainstorm and how many nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, are included in the load that goes into the Des Moines Water Works water intake. When the suit was first filed, my estimation is roughly 2/3 of the state, maybe even 70%, thought, what are they doing suing the farmers? They're just doing their job. And about 30% of the residents of the state supported the suit. That's, again, my estimate, not data, but and it's not endorsed by my company, but I think it's flip-flopped since then. The public perception is, yeah, those farmers ought to be doing more, and I shouldn't have to pay for contamination of the water that's from ag sources. So Again, part of it's our fault that we don't tell our story very well, but we also, I think it's incumbent on us that we bring this discussion to a level of urgency that it deserves. When soil moves, you cannot have nutrient use efficiency. Even if it's captured elsewhere in the field, before it enters the field, before it enters the stream or river, soil that's moving is not healthy soil, and it's not soil that you can achieve nutrient use efficiency. So this is such a simple and straightforward principle, but we have to elevate it in terms of the level of discussion, and we have to be honest with ourselves. Moving soil is not sustainable. Again, being part of a company that has some consumer direct branded products, we hear the signals from the market much more dramatically. Even baby boomers care more about the social contributions and social responsibility of the companies from whom they buy food. Did that Cozy Shack sweet yogurt dessert come from cows that were happy? Was that product comes from sustainably sourced food? We are part of we sell consumer branded stuff, and we have a very valuable brand on the shelf at the grocery store, that we are in tune with the consumer preference and the demand for consumer information about the food they consume, probably more so than most other companies involved in agriculture, because we have this consumer brand facing set of products. This is from Nielsen. You'd find a different answer from other sources, that people aren't willing to pay more for consumer friendly, socially committed, environmentally sensitive organizations, but we still get the sound from the upstream consumer or downstream consumer. Successful Farming ran a cover, I think it was last fall, that said, "Meet your new boss." And these consumers are our new boss. They're demanding more information about where their food came from and that it was sustainably sourced in manners that was aligned with my own values. And whether they'll pay more for it or not, it doesn't matter. This is what the consumer demands. We need to be out there and make this a part of our business. The companies that are in tune with the consumers are looking for information to help provide more more continuity and more transparency with their food value chain system. And we need to be aware of that and address the market. One of the things we're doing and have done is try to reach out to that consumer. And I want to mention the Winfield Crop Adventure. Fair Oaks Farms is a large dairy that's located between Indianapolis and Chicago. And if you're out there on the interstate, I urge you to get off and stop in at the Fair Oaks Farm. There's a series of adventures. It's an agritourism site that you can go see where your food comes from. You can watch a dairy calf be born and a chicken hatch and a pig born, and you can now tour the Winfield Crop Adventure and see a little bit more about how the crop is produced. And I just want to put in a plug for it. If you are touring with family, drop in and see this. This is one of our efforts to try to figure out how are we going to reach what we call the other 98%. That is the portion of Americans that have nothing to do with our food supply and don't maybe even know where it comes from. In closing, I would like to, we use a quote quite a bit internally. I think we're kind of worried about whether it's appropriate or not, but I'll share it with you. If I'd asked my customers what they would want, they would have said "Faster Horses" by Henry Ford. We're maybe early to the game, but we're offering, we're intending to offer some products and some information and some new kinds of approaches to documenting sustainability of crop production methods before really people had asked for it. And so we're going out a bit out on a limb here to try to see if we can push the envelope and develop some set of products and quality assurance and some kind of transparency supported by data and that traces back and demonstrates that we are doing a better job. We're making continuous improvement in crop production, and we're in tune with the demand by the consumer that we do things in a more sustainable way that has less impact on the environment. So finally, our corporate mission is feeding human progress, and we think that this new approach, I don't know if it's going to be successful or not, honestly, but we're going to try to make a go of it, and our intent is to continue to feed human progress. So with that, I have a few minutes. Are there any questions? And thanks for hanging in here, by the way.
Thanks, Todd. Any questions?
Thanks. I missed the beginning, so I might have missed this, but I'm just wondering how you thread the needle of this being a sales production strategy where and you obviously don't think that. So do you see that because you think you can sell a similar level of inputs and then by using them more immediately the impacts are reduced? Is it because you're selling the sustainability service? Are you going to sell sustainability products like cover crop seed? What is the additional sales? How are you going to balance
It's a great question. Historically, I'll just be real blunt. You know, we compensate people on their ability to sell stuff. And it's a real switch to switching over to selling a service along with the stuff. Now, sometimes when we shift, yes, we sell them cover. The answer is yes. We'll sell them stuff, and we'll sell them cover crop seed. We'll sell them new services, maybe some new formulations of extended release fertilizers, or maybe we'll sell a nitrification inhibitor or urease inhibitor. We'll encourage them to use split applications or maybe provide a service that they would pay for to help achieve more sustainability and better outcomes on their farm. Yes, we might be taking some of their land out of production, but that probably needs to be taken out of production anyway, and that means we're selling inputs on fewer acres. Absolutely, and that's a concern. However, we think it is our duty to help bring our farmer owners, remember they own the co-op system, it's our duty to sort of elevate this. And again, being owned by the customers that buy stuff from you, as well as the dairies that sell you milk, we have a different level of permission, a different level of engagement, and maybe even an obligation to help them be ahead of looming regulation, ahead of other things that are, you really ought to be thinking about maybe taking that eroded hillside out of production. It's not profitable. I could continue to sell you fertilizer and seed to keep farming it, but, we both know maybe we should look at other options. It's a shift, definitely, in how we do business, and it's not easy. We do think that we're in a unique position to try to push the envelope here and see what we can make happen. Perhaps didn't emphasize that enough, but yes, our job is to help them improve the ROI on the inputs that they do buy from us, as well as improve the profitability of their entire operation. Again, Those farmers own us. It's our job to help them with whatever business challenges that they face. And if we can, again, leverage our size and scale and perhaps technology, that we can help them become better, that's part of our role as being owned by farmers.
Thank you, guys.